Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Mike Cosentino here. Steve Williamson is off, I don't know, doing something.
Something to his teeth, right?
Yeah, that's right. But we do have a wonderful surprise for you this morning. Let's not call it a surprise. We have Adrian Fontes, the Maricopa County Recorder. And those of you that follow state politics, this position is a big deal. And it's a big deal, and it's become a bigger deal with voter suppression, with all the things the Republicans are doing. And have been doing. They can't win by policy, as we pointed out, but they have to cheat. And one of the ways of cheating, to get right into it this morning, is voter suppression and not allowing and doing all sorts of ways of manipulating the vote. I'm going to say good morning to Adrian Fontes.
Good morning.
We have Klaus von Stutenberg here.
Stutterheim.
I do that all
morgen.
The time. I
good
try.
Morgen, allerseits.
And he's our crack research department, and so we have everything there is to know about Adrian Fontes and voting in Arizona. Klaus knows, but we want
well, that's good, Klaus.
Yeah, it is.
You can tell us.
He's good.
You can tell us a thing or two.
Yeah, he can lead the way here. But seriously, no, not seriously. Adrian,
yes, sir.
Tell us, do your own intro here, other than being knowing my children down in Phoenix.
As a matter of fact, it's odd because you and I very, very recently met, but I've known your kids for some time. I used to be a bit of a legal guy. I had a law firm down on 6th Street in Roosevelt, in downtown Phoenix, which is a neighborhood very familiar to the younger part of your family. And we used to run into each other at coffee shops and talking around and hanging out, and they're wonderful, wonderful people. You did a great job raising both of them.
What kind of law did you practice?
I did criminal defense work, as a matter of fact. I prosecuted for a while, and so right into the introduction, I suppose. Actually, I'm originally from Nogales, grew up down on the border.
Oh, wow.
I went to Arizona State University after high school, enlisted in the United States Marine Corps. I wasn't doing so great in college, and I got myself straightened up after 4 years of walking tall there, and then came back, finished my bachelor's degree from what is now the Barrett Honors College, and then went up to the University of Denver, the Sturm College of Law there, got my JD, came back, and I was prosecuting in Colorado, then here for a while, and then got into private practice, which I came out of in 2016 when we saw those incredibly long and unacceptable lines in Maricopa County in that presidential preference election gone awry that March. And that's when I decided to run for public office. I'm a bit of a Jeffersonian type of guy, right? I think every citizen ought to, whether it's a PTO or a school board or a larger office, I think every eligible citizen who has the capacity ought to put in a little time in public service. And it seemed like the right time and the right office. And honestly, I didn't think I would win, but I did. And so now I've got to do the job. And I think I think it's been a blessing in disguise.
Was that a big pay cut?
It was something that makes it doesn't make my wife happy. Let's just say it that way. Yeah, it was pretty significant. But, you know, I'm not just impacting myself and my family now. We're having very positive impacts across over 60% of the votes in Arizona, which are in Maricopa County. If Maricopa County was a state, it would be the 26th largest state in the union by population.
Yeah.
While it's not geographically bigger than Coconino County or Yavapai, as I understand, we're still the size of Vermont with the population of Kentucky.
Yes.
And the population is?
The population's pushing 4.5, 4.6 million right now, and we've got 2.5 million registered voters. So it's a pretty big place.
Yeah, Yavapai County is about the size of New Jersey. The one of the we obviously on Democratic Perspective here, in the name of the show, we have had a lot of candidates over the years. We get lots of folks. And I always ask them, what are you doing here? All the votes are in Maricopa.
Well, no. I mean, all the Maricopa votes are in Maricopa. But if you're running statewide or if you're doing anything really across the state, look, Arizona is and has always been a small place. You know, a lot of people know a lot of people.
That's right.
Folks get in each other's business in the best way and with the best intentions. There's an old joke down south of the Gila River that everybody's a Democrat until they get electricity and running water, which I think is true up in this side of the Gila as well. But you know, it's a very independent state, and people talk to each other. You know, there's a lot of relationships that go far beyond county lines, and if you're going to be running statewide or even in your counties, you got to be in contact with people all over, you know. And so I don't think that it's either unusual or wrong to be coming up here and talking to folks who, you know, we're going to have an impact on. Let's just be honest. Maricopa County has an impact on the entire state because of the number of voters, the sheer number of voters. You know, it's funny. Maricopa County is the largest voting jurisdiction in the state. Do you know what the second largest voting jurisdiction in the state is?
Coconino?
You'd think it was Pima because of Tucson.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's actually the city of Phoenix.
Ah.
The city of Phoenix itself has more registered voters than the entire county in Pima County. So when we talk about the size and influence of Maricopa County, you can't escape it statewide. Yeah. And so if there are folks from down there who are coming up here to talk to people up here, it's because we want to have that open line of communication and learn what the interests are statewide. Right. And so that to me is very valuable. And plus, I like being in Sedona. I used to be a counselor down at the Oak Creek Ranch School in Cornville.
Yeah, you can buy it, by the way. It's for sale.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. I don't think I make enough money anymore.
No. It's a long, long story. But they do have signs on some of the dorms that you can take the building. I asked, what does free building mean? She says, take the building.
Yeah, they're set up because that's down in the floodplain down there.
Anyway, and you're right. When she just said about having candidates here in Yavapai County, it's a trick question. Not that, you know, it's unusual for a guy in a radio to ask a trick question. Knowing that Maricopa is often divided, that Yavapai can make the difference. It certainly made the difference for Janet Napolitano.
Yes.
6,000 votes. We claim that here in Yavapai County, Janet, we elected our Democratic governor. We claim that we elected Kyrsten Sinema. She won by 30,000 votes. We got her 29,000 in Yavapai County.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's no way to tell that, but we... But
yeah, there's some people down there blaming me for that. All I did was count them.
in this day and age, with Adrian Fontes, Maricopa County recorder, counting the votes is a big deal.
Well, it's always been a big deal. Right. And
it didn't seem like such a big deal. No offense.
Well, no. And I think you're right. And, you know, my thesis on this goes back only a few years. You know, people are like, oh, it goes back to Bush v. Gore. Not really, because the outcome of elections really didn't have much of a controversy during the aughts. Right. The 2002 through 2010, 12, 14. But it wasn't until the last time we had a pretty significant challenge on the D side of the aisle for president. Uh-huh. And in 2015, late summer, early fall, you saw this outside guy popping up in the name of Bernie Sanders, and he was up against Hillary Clinton, who had already locked down all the superdelegates.
Right.
And the Republicans seized on that for their own messaging purposes, but it raised a significant question, and that was, is democracy really democratic? And the context was only inside of that context and inside of the Democratic Party at the DNC level.
Right.
But it resonated across the entire of society because they talked about it like crazy. Now, is it not? That's not the point. The point was, are our elections fair? And so every little hiccup, every minor incident was amplified significantly through the course of that into the primaries of early 2016. Of course, we had those very long lines in Maricopa County in March of 2016, which was the impetus for my candidacy, and so on and so on. Then the Russian interference became well known,
right,
and all of the other stuff that started happening. So the idea that the administrator of elections is a very important and critical part of our society really didn't start developing significantly as a conversation piece until just a few years ago. And now I find myself in this really incredible position.
Exactly.
2 years into my first elected office. But I do appreciate that this is a really, really important spot.
I do want to mention, and you don't have to expand it, but I want to mention that presidential preference election in March of 2016 was so nationwide, it was covered nationwide, mm-hmm. the lines were so long, it was such a fiasco that it put, not only did it put Arizona on the map for voter suppression, for look like intentional voter suppression. It put Adrian Fontes in a race. So that's what it's about. But since then, quite frankly, everybody watches Maricopa County. I mean, you have and we're talking watched nationwide.
Yeah.
Arizona is more and more watched that way politically for lots of reasons, since the Voting Rights Act went away, at least in most.
Right. The Shelby County case. Yeah.
Yes. Even more so. I'm going to ask you about, let me ask you about it now. Should that be bought back? Is voter fraud, is voter suppression in Arizona bad enough to have the Voting Rights Act restored?
Yeah, let's get a couple of terms straight away.
Please.
Voter fraud is about as rare, it's more rare than getting hit by lightning. Voter fraud does not happen on a wide scale basis.
Right.
And we know that, because A, we know that, the allegations come from folks who aren't really used to the truth. And B, there is no evidence at all whatsoever. And nobody's ever been able to find or identify any evidence. So voter fraud doesn't exist on a wide scale level. Voter suppression, on the other hand, takes many, many different forms. Sometimes voter suppression is even unintentional, but it exists nonetheless.
Right.
And so we have to look very carefully at the science of administering elections as opposed to the science of campaigning, and that's something that I want to make sure that we point out very clearly. If you've been involved in a campaign, you don't know anything about running an election. They're very, very, very different. And
right.
that's a lesson that I've been learning over the last couple of years. Came to a head in August, and we've kind of recovered from that in November. Actually, we did pretty well. But the reality is, when we look at voter fraud that doesn't exist and voter suppression that does exist, we have to really look at the thing for what it is. And then we have to ask ourselves the question, how bad is it, and what can we do about it? But you really got to understand why it's happening. So it comes in a lot of different forms. It does exist, and it exists in so many different forms, and that's because we have so many different election administrators.
Right.
The United States of America is made up of 3,069 counties and parishes, and every single one has a separate election department.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true.
Yeah.
And so there are 3,000 plus different ways of running an election. And so when you have that many different, and each one of them might have different policies even within the same states. So the idea that the Secretary of State, for example, who's the person who's usually blamed for all the mess,
right?
Recently, Michelle Reagan took a deep, deep fall politically.
And deserved it.
Well,
A lot of it.
Fair enough. But the idea that she was responsible for a lot of the decisions, the bad decisions that were made, is just not true.
Mm-hmm.
We just like to have one person to pick on for everything, and the national media doesn't pay attention to the details, and so they'll blame the Secretary of State. When the truth of the matter is, it's our county recorders and our elections directors who are responsible for the administration of our elections. So we really need to become a little bit better educated and a little bit better informed as citizens if we see voter fraud, to figure out who it is responsible and who to ask those questions of.
One of the things I want to do before you leave is congratulate you on the voter turnout increase and the voter count increase. It seems like these two things are huge for Democrats, being able to have people turn out, being able to have and if they turn out, those votes are counted, and that's a really, really big deal, and that is changing things. It is slow. We talk about the drip drip. You talk about the drip drip,
yeah.
of change, and that's part of it. I understand you didn't have necessarily a direct impact on voter turnout. That's the stuff that people like Kloss and I do.
Well, and I kind of think that we did. We spent nearly $500,000 in Maricopa County talking to people about Well, where to find their voting locations, instructions about when, where to sign, how to do this sort of exercise of voting. So we did have some impact on that. And, in fact, we worked directly with Leslie Hoffman, for example, the Yavapai County Recorder, yep. and some of the others around in the region, because our media market hits everyone. Right in central Arizona, even northern Arizona. Right. So what we did was we came up with some pretty standard plans about how we were going to talk about early voting. An important one, for example, is when is the last day to mail in your
yes.
early ballot?
It was huge.
And we all agreed it was going to be 7 days prior to the election. So the Wednesday before election day was the last day to mail it in. Now, the post office will say 4 days to guarantee delivery, but we wanted something solid that we could all talk about across the entire state, so that when we went and did our advertising, when the Clean Elections Commission, who also did a bunch of advertising with our bigger budgets, we could impact voters around the state and let them know the same thing. So we simplified our messaging, we made it much more direct, and we worked in cooperation with officials all over Arizona to make sure that we were consistent. And that's the kind of work that really helps. And I think it really helped increase turnout across Arizona.
It really does. Because that's the single biggest question I got is, as a community organizer or whatever, a campaign involved, a politically involved activist, I get that question more than anything. So I want to congratulate you on that. The other amazing thing, this is only because and there are a lot of people who work at elections. We're talking 200 different kinds of ballots just for Yavapai. In other words, Sedona, you got a question on the ballot that Cottonwood doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And you got, if you're not in Cottonwood or Sedona, if you're in the county, your ballot will look different. And this is really a hard concept for people to get used to.
So we call it a ballot style.
There you go.
In the business. And the style is, let's say you live in Ward A for this city council.
Yeah.
Or Ward B for that city council.
Right.
You get a different ballot style.
How many styles you got in Maricopa County?
Well, the lawyer answer is it depends on the election. But the real answer is in our primary in 2018, we had somewhere close to 5,000 different ballot styles.
Wow.
Yeah.
And here's why. Look, we've got every party gets their own ballot. So for each ballot style, you had to have, wherever there were contested primaries, you had to have ballot styles for each of those primaries, each of those precincts. The school districts, the city council questions, all of these things. And people forget, Maricopa County's got 25 municipalities in it.
Yeah.
We've got five different congressional districts completely inside the county, and we touch on three more. The only one that's not part of Maricopa County is CD2 down in the southeast corner of the state.
Wow.
We have Indian tribes. We've got 27 school districts, 28 school districts or something like that. We've got fire districts. We've got We've got waste management districts, and when you think about all the combinations from address to address going down a major street, you can go, every quarter mile and hit a different ballot style, depending on the jurisdictional splits that you've got inside of those precincts. If we ran precincts that had singular ballot styles on them in Maricopa County, or at least de minimis ballot styles, mm-hmm. We couldn't get to singular, first of all. It's impossible mathematically. But secondly, we'd have a flat single ballot in each precinct would be 1,800 ballot styles.
I see.
But we can't do that. We have to combine them. And
right.
So we end up with 2,700 as a regular.
So how do you manage 5,000 different ballot styles?
Very carefully.
I hope. But how does it actually take place? I mean, is it manual? Is there some automated way of doing it?
So we have a GIS department of our own, which is a mapping department, and we have to because, look, one of the major industries in Maricopa County, as you know, is development. And when a developer buys a plot of land, they don't care where the school district lines are. And if they throw up a multi-housing apartment complex, they might be building half of it in one school district and half of it in the other school district.
Right.
And you multiply that by the millions and millions of people and the couple million houses that we've got, it's a pretty complex job, and it is full-time all year round, every year, to make sure that we're putting people in the right places. So what we do is we assign addresses, and then we go through and we look through the multiple layers around there, and then we'll go and verify each one. And it is a relatively manual and labor-intensive process.
That's all I wanted to do was to make listeners aware of the different ballot styles, and that it's not just a simple task of putting people's names on a thing in a checkbox and it's the same everywhere. It's just so, it changes from block to block, or as you said, from apartment to apartment, which is really even more amazing.
Yeah, we've got a couple of houses that the actual line for a congressional district will go straight through the house because the builders.
How do you manage that?
Well, so the white sleeps on the left side. I don't know.
Well, we will we'll look to the driveway, and we'll assign a map point on the driveway. So it usually kind of depends on the driveway. Sometimes we'll do center mass of the house. Is a policy that we've used. So it just really depends on what it looks like. We have to make a judgment call, you know, at some point. So it's a little complicated.
I want to ask you, once again, before we, I want to ask you about your certification. I know this is something you've been working on, and I think it's important because who knew this even existed?
Yeah. Oh, so, once I got elected, I realized that I didn't really know as much as I thought I did, because I took time to listen to the people in the office. And one of the things that, several of them had was this certification called CERA. It's a certified registrar and elections administrator. And so the CERA certification is a national certification. There's only been, I think, 1,800 or 2,000 people that have received it since the late 70s. Around the United States.
And who does the certification?
The certification is done by a place called the Election Center. They were originally based out of Auburn University in Georgia, and now they've got an office in Katy, Texas. And so it's a nonprofit, and they put on this certification nationally. A lot of people are going through it now because people are really understanding the value of actually going through and understanding the questions, right? Communications, logistics, planning, project management. Man, there's so much that's involved there, and including history, a lot of constitutional stuff, a lot of civil rights questions. And so the certification is a very long process. It usually takes, on a fast track, it'll take over 2.5 years.
Wow.
And so I've been able to get to the point where I'll graduate in August of 2019. With that full certification.
Well, we're talking to Adrian Fontes, Maricopa County Recorder, a big wheel in the counting the votes in Arizona. We're here on Democratic Perspective. I wanted to talk also about your position with Let America Vote.
Yeah, so
I belong to that also.
Oh, phenomenal. Yeah, so that's a Jason Kander organization. As you know, Jason was a former Secretary of State in Missouri, and he ran for the United States Senate, did not win, and instead of kind of taking his ball and going home, he began this organization whose job it is to basically hold voter suppressionists accountable.
I love it. I just love the name. Let America, just
right.
Let them vote.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and so I had the pleasure of introducing Jason at the Democratic Heritage Dinner a couple of years ago down in Phoenix, and sat at the table with him, and just really, I did some research on him before he showed up and everything. The guy's a Afghanistan war vet. He was a captain in the Army. He saw some action, and, you know, just a great guy, family guy. I think his dad was a cop, you know, just one of those, you know, kind of middle America.
Yeah.
Golden boy type of guys,
yeah, yeah.
Right? And so we got along real well. He can't hold his liquor, by the way.
Okay.
Just going to put that out there.
Okay, that's important on this show.
But on that dinner, I got to introduce him. And here's the funny story about how that played out. So we're sitting at the head table, and Congressman Gallego, who's also a former Marine like myself, he's sitting at the table over. Well, Ruben did a speech first. You know, they give all the big electeds a couple of minutes, and he got up there and gave Jason Kander a really hard time because Jason was in the Army.
Oh.
And the Marine Corps and the Army don't always get along very well.
And nor should they.
Nor should we.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, the Army is just not as good as the Marine Corps. Anyway,
okay.
So it's my job to introduce him. So I get up, and Jason was laughing while Ruben was giving him a hard time. So I'm like, okay, this is going to work out. So I get up, and I had prepared a whole bunch of jokes, like giving him a hard time for being in the Army.
Yeah.
And I went through it, and he was sitting there like shaking his head laughing, and he's like, what have I gotten myself into?
Really?
You could tell he was thinking that.
Really?
Now, this is a guy I'd never met before, but we got along really well during the course of the dinner and stuff, and so I figured it was okay to go ahead and go through with this. And so he gets up, and the guy's he's such a great guy, has such a good sense of humor. He gets up and he says, hello, Arizona. Thanks for having me. He said, if I had known this was going to be a roast, I would have been more prepared. and the moment, it was really, really sweet. And
sure.
It was really genuine, and he's a very authentic guy. Well, yeah. That authenticity translates directly into his love of America and American democracy and the constitutional republic that we enjoy. And he is very dedicated and has created this national organization that has, you know, a lot of visibility. And I will tell you, Let America Vote is one of the best organizations I've been a part of. He invited me to be on the board, in spite of all this, me to be on the board of advisors, which I think is great. So you can look up Let America Vote, support that organization. They're on Twitter, they're on Facebook, they're all over the place. And if we can figure out a way to get it done, we're going to try to get a chapter opened up here in Arizona.
Excellent.
And so I'm already working on trying to figure out to get some funding for that. It's going to have to come from here. And so that's one of the other
projects. If I can help you up here with that, a Democratic Perspective can help you up here with that. We'd love to.
We will definitely be in contact.
And you're in a little bit of trouble. I believe we got ex-Army here.
I didn't know you. I didn't know you were in the.
I'm ex-Army and ex-Air Force.
Okay. That's the difference.
I have three.
You'd say you're ex-Army, and I say a former Marine, because once a Marine, always a Marine.
That's it. And I think
we're ex-Army.
We over here. We have. You could be. I could be in trouble here. I could be in trouble.
And yeah. I'm guessing he's a devil dog. And you know why I know? Because his shirt's tucked in and his belt's through all the loops. I saw that when I walked in.
He's pointing to Tom Tabak, who is the owner of the station.
Semper Fi, brother.
Pointing to Tom Tabak.
Listeners know who we're talking about.
Exactly. The visuals in radio are just not what they used to be. And it's Tom's fault. Go ahead, Klaus. I'm sorry.
you said something interesting at breakfast about how you reduce the number of polling places that normally, you know, the press would pick that up as voter suppression, but as you explained to us, actually you managed to make things work more smoothly that way. You want to talk about that for a minute?
So that's magic and quantum physics. No, actually it's just math. I mean, and the example that I use is very simple. Let's say you've got a big neighborhood and you've got four or five Walgreens, right, and people are showing up to shop. And there's one checkout line in each one. You're going to get a line in every single one of those. Let's say you've got two Walgreens open, but you've got three check-in lines at each one. You're not going to have a line. It's just a question of math. It's line management. And we did go from something in the neighborhood of 680-plus polling places in Maricopa County during the 2016 general, and that was a presidential, down to 503 just several weeks ago for the November general. And we didn't have long lines. We did in one location, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But the idea that we expanded our check-in lines from two to three at each location, a minimum of three. Some of them had six, some had nine, some even had 12. But by expanding just the mere number of check-in lines and reducing the amount of time it took to check in from an average of right under 4 minutes to an average of right under 1 minute.
Wow.
Then we really effectively were taking something that would have taken an 8 minute process with two lines at 4 minutes, and we turned it into something where in those 8 minutes we could process, you know, half a dozen voters, which was great.
Being an old guy and the veteran of lots of voter lines, it's a big deal. Change in check-in time. But I say that on the one hand. On the other hand, changing anything when it's related to voting is one of those core things.
But Mike, it's as American as apple pie.
Yeah.
And let me talk about change in elections.
Yes.
All right. When the United States was first in its formative years, there was no such thing as anonymity. Elections were exclusively open to white male landowners, generally speaking.
Sure.
Now, there were exceptions, of course. And guess where they voted? They voted either in a church basement or at a pub or in a town hall, which was a pub.
Right.
Right. And you know how they voted? Not with paper. But they would have a candidate stand up and talk on one side of the room, and they'd have a candidate stand up and talk on the other side of the room, and the voters would gravitate one way or the other. And then they would take a poll. You know, poll is, right? Poll is the Greek word for head. And that's, you take a poll. They'd
count
heads on one side, they count heads on the other side, and the winner's the winner. Well, that evolved into what we have now, but not through a whole bunch of, not exclusively away from change. We adopted the Australian ballot, which is the secret ballot. first in Massachusetts, and then we called it the Massachusetts ballot because we can't adopt foreign things in the United States, right? And so the secret ballot came about. Women were eventually allowed the right to vote, starting out here in the West and then eventually adopted nationally. As a matter of fact, Arizona was one of the first states to give women the right to vote.
Progressive Arizona.
And, so the idea that change is bad in elections is really a misnomer. It's the voter's habit that the voter doesn't want to adjust. And that's okay. It's okay. But as long as the administrator of the election is talking to the voter and letting them know a little bit about why we're adjusting things and giving them a heads up, then that's okay. And the voters are going to be like, okay, at least I know. So what we do is every time we're going to have an election, we look at the permanent early vote list, which is, three quarters of the voters get their ballot in the mail, so they don't have to go anywhere to vote. Then we'd go and send a postcard to all of the households that are not on the permanent early vote list. They have a voter that's not on the PEVAL. And so we send them a postcard with a sample ballot that says, here's your polling location, right? And if the polling location changes, they know that. They've got written notice of this. Moreover, what we started doing this time was we started a massive public information campaign, and we opened a website called locations.maricopa.vote,
nice.
Which is a subset of maricopa.vote, which is easy to remember. And we used our basic county information line, which is a line that's used by the treasurer's office, the assessor's office, and the recorder's office during non-election times. So we had this combination of lots of information, but put forth in a very simple and understandable way for our voters. And that's the best way to talk to people, because nobody hates change. We just kind of don't like it so much. But if the administrator of elections, in my case, me, if I think about the voter's experience,
That's true.
I think about it from their perspective, all a voter needs is the respect of information.
But that's rare, quite frankly.
Just tell us what's up. Well, it may be rare, but that's the way I operate.
Right.
There's the three core principles of my administration are, number one, the voter experience. Number two, the accountability of the vote. Right. And number three, security, and not necessarily in that order.
Right.
But when you look at those three general themes, it covers everything. And you're going to have an improved election across the board if you just focus on those things. So anything we decide to do, we ask ourselves, is it fulfilling each one of these three things? Is it sacrificing any of these three things? If we're sacrificing any of it, then we're very reluctant to make that adjustment. But if it's promoting all three, we're less reluctant to do it.
Adrian Fontes, Maricopa County Recorder, is our guest today on Democratic Perspective. Talk about security. It seems, I don't know, once again, we're in the dark ages on purpose. I do my banking online. Not that it's a lot of money. I do everything online. And we can't. It should take, nanoseconds to vote and count.
Well, it can, but the question, you said it should, and I don't know that I agree with that. And let me tell you why. The bank, the relationship you have with your bank is a private transactional relationship. That's just you and the bank. The relationship.
Hopefully.
You and the bank and whatever hackers are getting into.
Exactly.
That.
Go ahead.
But the relationship you have with your vote, it's not just you and that candidate. It's you and our democracy. It's you as a minister of our democracy through your vote. Mm. And it is something entirely different. So the apple and the orange right here are really, really brought to bear. This is something that is a different thing. So when you look at what it is, and the importance of getting it right the first time, then you really start to realize, we might have something here that we don't want to mess around with, and we want to make it secure as possible. Now, Maricopa County and most of Arizona never went away from a paper ballot. Some counties did and went back, but we've never gone away from a paper ballot, and I don't see going away in the foreseeable future. A lot of people talk about blockchain and all kinds of other innovations. Well, none of that's really proven better in any way. They're different. They're different ways of doing the same thing. But with a paper ballot, what you have is the physical manifestation of a voter's intent.
Exactly.
And that's special. And that's different. And because elections are different and special, we want to make sure that our voters are treated and their vote is treated with that kind of respect. I don't have a problem with digital stuff. I do some of my banking online as well. But this is different, you know. So we gotta maintain the faith in the system. But in order to do that, we've got to take a step or two back and look at the system itself for what it stands for, what values it upholds, and then make judgments about it or how to improve it without getting that out of our heads. Because if we just see it as a transaction, X counting Y, then it's a different thing. And that's not what these systems are about. So I'm not resistant to change by any stretch of the imagination, but I want to make sure that we do it intelligently. Yeah.
Adrian, at breakfast, you told an interesting story about the rejection of signatures on election day and then Republican reversal when that didn't seem to be to the advantage. I thought that was an interesting story.
So in Maricopa County, which was not the policy statewide, if you get an early ballot, which most Arizona voters do, let's say you mail it in 2 weeks ahead of time. If there's a problem with the signature, you should get a call from your county recorder's office. All county recorders do, as far as I know. And they're like, well, what's wrong? Well, you know, I came down with Parkinson's disease 8 months ago, and now my signature's different, or I broke my hand, or I'm not 18 anymore. You know, I'm 28. My signature's okay, that's fine. And we figure out ways of validating those signatures. But if it gets turned in on election day, the practice in most of the state, not all of the state, but in most of the state, was if there's a mismatch on an election day early vote, you have to reject it. And that, in my mind, was fundamentally flawed perspective, because if you're affording that due process to a voter before the election on an early ballot, it's the exact same ballot, now you're treating it differently because it's election day. Moreover, if you go to a polling place on election day and you don't have identification, which is required by state law, you can still cast a ballot, and it's called a conditional provisional ballot, and you've got 5 business days to come back and prove your identity. So it's a question of identity. You still get the ballot in. It's still going to get tabulated if you prove your identity, which is what we want to happen. So why is it then, I pondered, that these early ballots with questionable signatures should be rejected forthwith? That didn't make any sense. And so I said, look, we've already got this other mechanism here. It seems to be legal. So let's just call them conditional provisional early ballots and put them under the same statute and validate these signatures the same way we would have if they'd have come in, but only under that timeline. So we've already got a legal structure for it.
So there's provisional ballots, and then there's conditional provisional ballots.
They're a different monster.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to be clear here.
Yes.
And conditional provisional ballots need another action from the voter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yes. So we're not talking about regular provisionals, which are like change of address or something.
Got it.
We're talking about election day. I don't have my ID with me, but federal law requires you to give me a ballot.
Right.
I got to come back and show the recorder my ID.
Okay.
Then the ballot goes to the election.
So turning it around, a voter can ask for a conditional provisional,
They got to come back with their ID later.
But there are more actions necessary.
Yes.
Okay.
So what I said was, this is the policy we're going to use. And we put the policy out there and told everybody we were going to use it. And then after the election, the state Republican Party, along with a couple of the county parties, like Navajo Republican Party, a couple other county Republican parties, sued to block me from counting these, from securing these signatures.
Gee, the Republican Party didn't want to count ballots.
Well,
what a shock.
it gets better, right?
Well, yeah, so it gets better, right. So that was, however, while the original early vote tallies and I think some of the election day results were looking like Congresswoman McSally was going to be winning.
Right.
Well, we ended up at a temporary restraining order hearing because they wanted to get an order to stop me. And by the time we got to that hearing...
Just to be clear, they wanted to stop you while their candidate was ahead. Go ahead, move on.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we're already getting signatures validated. We're already getting voters to say, okay, we've got this issue, okay. And people are getting their ballots in under the policy I instituted. I'm like, this is great. They flipped 180 degrees after they realized that, wait a minute, we might need all of the rural counties to do what Maricopa County is now doing, because all of a sudden, the numbers from the rest of the early ballots came in, and it looked like Kyrsten Sinema was taking a slight lead.
Right.
So what the Republicans figured was, we have a political motive now for letting people vote. And so what they did was they proposed a settlement, which was 180 degrees. So first they sued to stop me.
Right.
They enjoined all of the rest of the counties to prevent any of the rest of them from doing what I was doing. But they proposed a settlement to force all of the counties to do what I was doing.
Wow.
So the settlement that was eventually signed was a settlement that somebody in one of the court filings or something called the Fontes model making sure that every ballot that was turned in, even through Election Day early ballots, that those voters had the opportunity to cure their signature if there was an issue. Now, in Maricopa County, we had something like 7,000 plus, a little over 7,000 ballots that had been turned in up to Election Day that had questionable signatures.
Uh-huh.
We validated and brought in about 6,900 of those as is cured, I mean, quote-unquote cured, right, made good. We contacted all of those voters. So there were only 304 of them that were actually rejected because of mismatch, and they were rejected. But, you know, those 6,000, almost 7,000 voters, those votes ended up counting because I insisted on giving those people the due process that they deserve, in my view, under the Constitution, in the face of a GOP flip-flop, because they had this political expediency argument that, of course, they didn't make in writing. And then they come and they're like accusing me of all kinds of crazy stuff. And I'm just like, you bring evidence and a lawsuit if you think that I'm doing something wrong. You bring that if you've got a real fight. But if you're going to play this political nonsense and stop voters from voting, you're going to get me in your face.
Yeah.
And that is an illegitimate and just a wrong way to be conducting election business. It might be okay out there on the campaign trail, but when you're administering an election, you have a sacred duty, right? Just like when you take that oath to enlist, you're gonna do what you got to do to uphold and defend the Constitution.
So we're talking Adrian Fontes, Maricopa County Recorder, the linchpin in the voting system for the whole state, but certainly down there because so many votes, 60% of the votes come out of Maricopa County. So you are obviously making some positive changes, at least as far as we can see.
Well, as far as voters are concerned,
as voters are concerned, thank you.
I think there's some political parties that don't like what I'm doing, but their voters don't mind.
Hey, believe me, I realize.
And frankly, some of the best compliments I've received, by the way, are from our Republican friends. They're like, hey, you're being treated really unfairly by our leadership. And I'm like, well, would you tell them to shut up?
Yes.
And they say no because to them it's a game, and to me it's not.
Yeah.
I take it very seriously. If I can improve the voter experience across the board and get a true expression of the voter's intent out there, then that's me doing my job, and that makes me happy. And I can honestly say it doesn't matter that my old college buddy David Garcia didn't win the governor's office. I did my job.
Right?
It doesn't matter that some of these other folks that politically I would have liked to see him win.
Sure.
We did our job. We did it well, and we have numbers that reflect the will of the voters. And that, to me, that's what's important.
We got less than 2 minutes left. Yeah. Is there anything else that's hanging out there that Adrian Fontes wants to do?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to replace the entire tabulation system in Maricopa County. The Board of Supervisors and I have already talked about it. We want to increase yet again the quality of our voters' experience and learn the lessons. Even though we had such a successful election in 2018, we want to get better. We've got a lot of elections coming up, and so there's a lot of stuff going on out there. And, you know, if I can make a minor plug for my own campaign, electfontes.com is still up and running, and we're going to need all the help we can get, so I'll just leave it at that.
That's great. You want to influence Arizona elections. You want to have some positive impact. That I would recommend helping out Adrian Fontes as Maricopa County Recorder. One of the things we also want to mention is that you can find this show and all our shows on our website at bvid.org. BVID.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. We'll have this show and all our past shows on the website. We want to say it's collected other places on the internet. Don't forget, you can listen to us anywhere in the world. Go to KAZM and you can pick up this radio broadcast in Borneo and any place else you can get to a computer. You can listen to Democratic Perspective any way you want. Thank you, Democrats of the Red Rocks. See you soon.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.